Hi Razor community, and thanks for joining us for another episode of the Razor Sharp Show, where we all hang out to stay sharp. We are your hosts, Ray Milodoni and Matt Romania. Matt, can you share why our podcast exists?
Our podcast exists to educate, inspire, and motivate you to help you reach your goals and make a positive impact in the world.
That's right. And we just love making our podcast every week and want to thank you, our listeners, for all the ongoing support you have shown. If this is your first time listening, well, welcome to the Razor community.
So if you want to move the needle forward and get closer to your goals, stick around as you're going to enjoy this.
In today's show, we talk about how to be authentic and that sometimes it is okay to write and talk about the things that you're not great at. We also talk about the fact that people don't buy products, they normally buy people. So it's really important to embed who you are in your brand and using that to stand out. We also talk about the importance of how to make yourself be felt in your voice and the way that you write online. We also go a little bit off script and talk about the big issue. Rachel talks about her experience about being homeless and how the big issue helps homelessness here in Melbourne and across the world. So the topic gets a little bit deep and I'm not going to lie, there's some tears shed also. It's a fantastic episode and it's just really true to what Rachel is passionate about and how she's using her writing and her voice to get the big issue out there. And she's written columns for the magazine and they've helped her really come to peace with what her experience has been and getting that out and feeling comfortable talking about it. And I was actually touched that Rachel went into her personal life and shared that with you, the Razor community, and myself. So it is an absolute great episode. Razor community, are you ready to sharpen your mind? Let's meet Rachel Kujip. Hi, Rachel, and welcome to the Razor Sharp Show.
Hey, how are you going? Thanks for having me.
No, I'm been great, thanks. And how have you been?
Pretty good. Well, actually, I feel like I'm a little bit cross-eyed because the last few days I've written about 8,000 to 10,000 words for...
Wow.
Multiple pieces for a client. So, yeah, I hope I don't look too cross-eyed. I kind of feel like I need to get out and stare at the distance at a beautiful mountain or something. Have a bit of a break.
Perfect. Love that. Love that. So, share with the Razor community a little bit about what you do in your business.
Sure. Well, I'm primarily based in Melbourne, but I do travel quite a bit. I'm a writer and communications consultant. So, there's kind of two aspects to my business. There's the writing side where I write a lot of personal pieces, things like homelessness, addiction, general sort of like travel tips. And I write them for a few different publications like The Big Issue and Newsmodo, where I have a fortnightly column. And cool. Then the consulting side of my business, I kind of do predominantly copywriting, but I do also offer digital marketing and business coaching services. And yeah, I've been really, really lucky. I get to work with a range of people from small businesses, entrepreneurs to really large organizations. And my clients are spread across the world, which is why I travel so much and I guess one of the perks of my job.
Yeah, I think you got a blog post called Digital Nomad. Is that a bit of a movement that you're living by?
Yeah, I guess. And I actually put out a blog post today that went live at like 9 a.m. actually talking about the downside of living that lifestyle, because it's something that's talked about like a lot by a lot of people, and it's definitely something that people kind of aspire to and definitely what I want to do. It's my dream to travel and work overseas, but also there's a lot of issues that come with it, such as missing your friends, not being there for like special events, working over time zones. Like sometimes I have to literally wake up at 4 a.m. and check my emails because the time zone differences, and the novelty wears off. So it's sort of like a lifestyle choice that you really, really want. And, like with any job or lifestyle choice, there's pros and cons. I just want to make sure everyone knows about them.
Excellent, excellent. And do you run yourself as a freelancer or a solopreneur? How are you structured? Is it?
Well, I guess, when I first started, to be honest, I called myself like a freelancer and a solo entrepreneur kind of thing. But then I found like a lot of people assumed that I was just doing it on the side. So they're like, so you just sort of, write and thought it was more of a hobby. And, so now when I explain myself and what I do, I say that I run a business. It's been going for nearly 2 years now, full time. I've been working on it on and off probably the last 5 or 6 years. And, you know, I've got processes in place. I've got regular clients. You know, I know who I work with, who I don't work with. And I sort of feel like, yeah, calling myself a freelancer assumes that I'll just take any job or get work through Fiverr or something like that. And, you know, I don't. Like, I have really sort of established myself as a business owner. And so, yeah, that's kind of how I describe myself.
Let's jump straight into this. Why do you think copywriting is a vital topic for business owners to understand?
I mean, copywriting is a passion of mine. And I know a lot of people who I sort of work with, like clients and who I coach, sort of come to me and say, oh, I kind of like writing, but I, you know, I'm terrible at copywriting. Like, is it important? And the answer, you know, to be honest, is yes. It's so important. It's just as important as, you know, having a fantastic website, having a fantastic, you know, point of sales, and having, like, you know, great visual branding, such as your logo, you know, your tagline, that kind of thing. It's just as important as that. And I think a lot of business owners struggle because for some reason or another, they're told that, like, you know, writing is a special kind of secret craft that, you know, that only like novelists have, or only these like special people have.
Kind of some
like
sort of club.
Yeah, it's like a club. Like, you know, I've even struggled for years to call myself a writer. Like, I've been writing for like since I was like in primary school, winning competitions and stuff. And it literally it took me until like a couple of years ago to be like, I'm a writer. And only really recently, I'm like, I'm a copy writer, like, you know, owning it. And I think it's because of this whole big club sort of against it. But it is like so important. And, you know, for two reasons, I guess for me, it comes down to why I think it's more important is brand, like brand awareness and creating your brand. So generally with copywriting, you sort of write copy for two reasons. You either do a direct response, so you want people to actually take an action, like buy a product, buy a service, do something straight after. But a lot of the actual copy is just about brand awareness and establishing your voice, who you are, letting people know that you're around. And so I feel like a lot of us sort of, don't sort of know the differences between the two, or we spend a lot of time on just trying to get people to buy stuff, which isn't great, and we miss all the branding awareness stuff. You know, we have the perfect logo, we have the perfect website, but then we sort of let the actual copy go, and they all go together. And so, yeah, I think that's why it's so important. It's important to get over this whole, like, it's a little club thing, and it's also important to recognize it's just crucial to business if you want to have, like, a kind of consistent brand identity. You want people to do stuff, you want people to know who you are, and I guess like attract your like ideal, you know, readers, supporters, subscribers, that kind of thing.
Yeah, excellent. I love that because you're quite right. You know, people who are, you know, calling themselves solopreneurs or freelancers these days, you know, they are very system driven. There's so many tools and applications to run yourself like an actual business with proper processes and procedures. And there are a lot of people who are doing that, and they may just be someone who, you know, has all these systems in place and can run with a very lean team. It doesn't mean that they can't take on bigger projects. And I've seen also where, you know, and maybe you've got some projects examples as well, where you'll probably output better than someone who has a team of 30, you know.
yeah, definitely. I mean, like, I feel like I kind of have a team in a way. I have an accountant who I saw the other day, and, you know, I have a web developer who I rely on. He's amazing. If there's any issues, you know, he checks my website, helps me maintain it. So I kind of feel like I do have a team. I also have a designer that I use sometimes if I need it. I mean, I can do all of those skill sets, but, you know, like any business, I have to put restrictions on it. And I agree, like, I work with some really, really large clients, and I think it is because it's just me. I can get everything done. I can work with their team quite quickly. I'm quite flexible, and I don't sort of have to, then brief another team member like an agency does and go down the line. Which I think some businesses like that. They like that really sort of business-to-business structure, but I think a lot of businesses now, especially some of the organizations I work with, such as like the World Bank or government agencies, sometimes they want someone who can come in and do things quickly. I mean, they've got enough processes themselves, so they don't really want to like add to that.
Yeah, Yeah, that's fantastic. You know, it removes the number of communication lines where things get, you know, interpreted differently, and your end product is nothing what the original brief was.
Yep.
You're in it, you're doing it all. And I think these days with the internet, it's very easy to feel very connected with a lot of different team members, even whether they're another outsourced company or a virtual assistant or something of those natures.
Yep.
And just for clarity, can you explain what the term copywriting actually means and what kind of things it might include?
I mean, copywriting, I think, means a whole bunch of different things to different people. Some people see it more as like that disgusting, you know, slimy salesman kind of stuff, which it's not. It can be, people can do that kind of copy, and that's not something that I, you know, promote or advocate for. But you find most copywriters generally believe that copywriting is using words and space and language to get people to do something, to take an action. Generally, that's why it's so important to have a great headline, which gets people's interests, gets people like clicking through, looking at your product. That's why it's so important to have like a call to action. So once you've got them, you know, reading or like, you know, being interested in your copy, to get them to do something. So, I mean, those are kind of elements. But generally, it's to get people to do something, whatever it is. And a lot of people will be like, oh, but I've got a service, so, you know, it's different to a product. And it's not really. Like, you want them to do something, whether it's to, you know, click a download, to call you, to, like, remember who you are, to know that you're, like, just around. So, you know, when you're hungry and you want that burger at 2 a.m., you know it's open. That kind of thing. So, yeah, so basically it's writing to get people to do something.
I guess talking about, you know, being someone who works for themselves and, you know, giving the image of a much larger organization, how does copywriting and content creation, you know, is there any tips you can give some of our solopreneurs or the Razor community that's listening about how maybe they can reshape their content on their website to give the perception or to sound bigger or be more serious in business, not sound like a freelancer, because the deliverables could be of equal?
Yeah, sure. I guess when I started writing about myself in the third person, or kind of try to make myself like this, sound like this massively large team. And then, you know, recently, like probably a year or so ago, I decided that I wanted to be seen as just me, and that I didn't have to sort of make myself sound like I was bigger and better and, you know, had like a team of 20 people behind me. And that actually my clients love the fact that it was just me. They love that when they hire me to write their content, it is me writing it. I'm not shipping it off to someone in the Philippines or something like that. Like, it is just me. And so I changed the way I spoke about myself. I said, I think this, I do that. Stop talking about myself in the third person. And I guess I still talk about myself like a normal business would. I say what my skill sets are, you know, my processes, you know, how I deliver my content. And I make that really, really clear, I suppose, like a business does, you know, when I'm available, when I'm not available. And so I think you can totally sound like, you know, a legit business, but then still be yourself. I mean,
yeah,
I feel like I suppose it's redefining, you know, what it is to be professional. And traditionally it was to sound like you had a team of 20 and made billions of dollars each year. And you don't have to do that anymore to be professional. People often come to me and say how professional my branding looks, how professional my writing looks, and that it's reflected in when they sort of meet me and work with me. And I guess that's because I'm upfront and I'm not trying to hide behind anything.
Yeah, and I think these days, you know, people's BS raters are much higher in tune, so they're going to see through all that nonsense, and, you know, it's, you know, that fake it till you make it type of mentality is being completely seen past, and to be authentic and genuine is definitely going to, you know, earn you better stripes forward, you know. So.
Yeah, definitely, and that's something that I've written about and talk a lot about with the businesses that I coach, and just in general. I think when people are trying to communicate who they are, what they do to attract their ideal supporter or client, a lot of the time they do kind of try and present this perfect picture of themselves, and we do have like a really good like bullshit rater. We're like, oh, come on, you did not just make 60 grand in the first week of business. Like, you know, you've been working at this for the last 10 years,
yeah.
Massive network, or, you know, like you didn't get 10,000 followers on, you know, Facebook in a day. You must have paid for them, or do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I help people sort of do that. And I think it's great to sometimes talk about things you've, you know, got wrong or mistakes that you've learned from. I mean, I talk a lot about on my blog about, you know, success and failure and the things I'm struggling with. And that's why people end up working with me, because they know sort of who I am, what I'm about. And yeah, they know that I'm not just trying to pull the wool over their eyes and charge the millions of dollars for copies. So
yeah, yeah, they're getting the real deal. Excellent, excellent.
Why your product is going to like solve their problems, then it's just not going to work. And so I think you needing to people needing to focus on that. And a lot of the time we kind of have an idea. We're like, yeah, we know they're like female and they're like 35 to 45. Yeah. And, you know, we know that they're like on the Facebooks and all that kind of stuff. We're like, oh, shit. Like, yeah. I don't know where they shop. I don't know how much money they have. I don't know what magazines, you know, I don't know what gets them up in the morning. That kind of stuff. And that's what in the end is going to speak to your audience. You know, when you like read coffee and you're like, oh my God, that's speaking directly to me. Like, and you click on it and you want to like download the thing and you want to call the person. When it's speaking to you, like, wow, this is, you know, directly addressing my problem and it's got a solution. But sometimes you're like, oh, well, I'm kind of looking for a new like ebook reader, but yeah, they're all kind of okay. And you kind of just sit and just wait around until something speaks to you. Such a competitive market, so it's about knowing that. And I guess the three ways that I suggest to really get to know your audience is using like your website analytics. I hope to God that every small business owner has, you know, Google Analytics or some inbuilt system and they're actually using it. Something I always tell owners that they definitely have to do. The second one is using inbuilt analytics and things, you know, like your Facebook account, Twitter account, etc. They'll give basics. But I think, again, like I was saying, they only really tell you like when they're online, their age, maybe their income, that kind of stuff. But to really know someone, you have to, like I said, know what their problem is and then present your product as a solution. And often to figure out who someone really, like who people really are, what their problems really are, how their day looks like, and what they want, you know, things to happen in their day to make it better, you have to just ask them questions. And so I think a lot of us now, with all sorts of social media and inbuilt things, we shy away from actually speaking to our audience, you know what I mean? Like literally calling them or sending them a survey or generally asking them questions throughout the year. Don't just hit them with like a 50 questions survey at the end of the year. Ask them stuff throughout. Like that's why you sort of see questions at the end of blog posts or, you know, like if I have a client and I've worked with them, you know, I send them out like a feedback form straight away and I ask them questions like, did it meet your expectations? You know, has your understanding of copywriting changed? All of that kind of stuff is how you can figure out really who your audience is. So you can speak directly to them and give them exactly what they want.
I love that. Yeah, the whole understanding your audience thing is so important and certainly a consistent theme across all the Razor Sharp episodes. I love how you mention a few different ways to learn more about your audience. You've got the web analytics as well, surveys and asking, you know, customers directly, like you're not relying on just one source, which, you know, if you're just looking at Facebook stats, then it's going to give you that quite broad definition of your audience. You got age and gender, that kind of thing. But if you compare, you know, using that and complementing that with website analytics and survey results, you're really starting to create that persona for your audience. And once that's done, then you can even think about starting to write. But yeah, it's from what you're saying is that creating that persona is step one to any good copywriting.
Yeah, definitely. And even when I work with clients, I need all of that information. And if they don't have it like already packaged up, like I literally do sometimes up to an hour and a half interview with them. And I ask them questions like I would a journalist or just like we're chatting now. I'm like, oh, yeah, so, you know, why did you start your business? And, you know, like what gets you up in the morning? Like what are you struggling with? And like, who do you think your audience is, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, and you'll be surprised how many business owners are like, yeah, my audience is this. And then I'm like, can I check out your web analytics? And then I'm like, hang on, like that's totally not who they are. And even I've done that. Like, I'm like, yeah, I know who everyone is. I'm so good. And then I'm like, oh, crap, my audience has changed because, you know, my business is growing and it's six months later and I'm attracting different people. So, again, you need to keep updating that. Like, you can't start your business and 3 years later being like, yeah, my audience is still this. Sometimes they're still the same person. But a lot of the time, if they've come on board with you and perhaps use, you know, one of your lower end products and you're trying to write copy to get them to say, maybe take on a bigger project, you know, their needs might change. And at first you might be hitting a kind of, you know, maybe a lower level problem. And then as they go through your products or services, maybe a deeper, you know, problem. So maybe lower level is like, you know, I want to look good or I want to save time. And then like a deeper level is like, I want to give back. I want to have recognition, you know, those kind of things. So you need to sort of keep on top of it and keep thinking like, where are they in my customer journey? Who are they? It's such a big part of copywriting. Again, I suppose it's, like I said, copywriting can be learned. Really, it's an extension of your sort of generalist sort of marketing stuff, but, you know, it's sure. Using content to write, you know, to compel people to do things. So you do need your sales and marketing there to back up your copy.
So when talking about copy, and let's talk mm-hmm. a little bit more in regards to, because you do coaching, you do speaking, you do blog packages. So what as an entrepreneur and someone who's starting up or, you know, in a business, and they kind of, you know, I think everyone knows that their blog's stuck or stale or something.
Yeah.
Like, what's the first tip that you could possibly share to kind of get people motivated in moving the needle forward in the right direction when it comes? Is there a framework? Is there a little mind map or something that people can do to move forward?
Sure. I guess when people start out, they always have, this plan to write like every single day, and they kind of put all this pressure on themselves to produce like amazing content that's going to get them all this business and, you know, 50 million likes. And I used to do that too. And you put so much pressure on yourself that you pretty much set yourself up to fail, unfortunately, because see that, you know, write blog posts on the top of your to-do list for like weeks after weeks. You're so scared to do it, right?
Guilty.
So, I know. And that's what I found, like, with my clients, which is why I started creating, like, you know, my fabulous blog bundle, because although, like, I help them write content, a lot of it is, like, coaching and sort of nudging people and giving them the frameworks and the steps, you know, they can take to write the content themselves. Because I'm a big believer in, being able to learn the basic writing principles and being able to write great copy. I mean, no one knows, like, you know, your business and you better than you. So if you can write that, that's like the best way. But I guess what I say to my clients and when I do speaking events is you should really just first of all write freely, like literally just get out a pen and paper. I actually find pen and paper is better than on the computer because we find that we just want to start editing ourselves and we can see like the little red underline, you know, like you spelt that wrong and all that. So I say just like write freely. And then also think about what you really, I suppose, which comes down to back to business and branding, like what you want to talk about. And generally, it's 2 to 3 topics that you know better than anyone else that comes naturally to you. And so then I sort of find that if you focus on 2 to 3 topics as opposed to like one day talking about, I don't know, an amazing sandwich you brought at a like restaurant and how great their marketing was. And then the next day talking about how you're trying to find more clients and how you're using, you know, like Snapchat. And then the day after that, I don't know, talk about how you're going on a trip to London. You know, it's really confusing for people. And it's hard for you to come up with these new random ideas each day. So I think if you choose 3 categories and then stick to them and brainstorm from 3 points. So for example, mine are writing in general, sort of general kind of content marketing, digital marketing, and sort of life pieces, such as like I was talking about before, like me writing about actually being more afraid to succeed than fail, which is a really, really popular topic. So I think if you sort of stick to 2 or 3 and then you brainstorm from there, generally I write like 10 to 15 ideas under each heading, and then I sort of plan those out. And then it makes it easy when I come to sit down because I've kind of got a bit of a structure and then I can brainstorm from there. And I also collect like with Pocket and notes everywhere, like from sticky notes to my phone, different ideas. So if I read something, like I said, I read a lot, add certain quotes or ideas, I kind of capture them and then use them as writing points as well. And yeah, I kind of find that helps because when people sit down, like I said, they just freak out or because I feel like they have no ideas and nothing to say and all they put all this pressure to write like every day, and that's just not sustainable for most people.
And when you are gathering all this information and stats and data about, you know, an audience, often that can be quite overwhelming for business owners as well. Do you have like a framework or some sort of template that you put all that into to say, here's your audience and this is why I'm going to write that copy? I'm just interested to know that link between understanding your audience and now I'm starting to write.
Definitely. I think each copywriter is slightly different. I've got a template that I'm like happy to send you and you can share it or you can Google these type of things. I have like a customer persona kind of template and people have all different ones. You literally can have like, you know, even add like random images from like Google and, you know, stick them in to sort of visually represent who people are. But generally I just literally write things like, I suppose the basic kind of like their names and nationalities and gender, income, etc. Then I sort of move on to what I think their main problem is. So I have like a problem areas, you know, like, and I suppose that comes from the questions like, how's your day, you know, what's your day look like now? How do you want things to change? I literally write like the main problem that I'm trying to solve. Underneath it, I put the solution, which is obviously like a product or service, but really specifically, not just like ebook reader.
Yeah.
You know, like you want to go a little bit deeper than that and sort of, I suppose, the purpose of your product. So that would be the solution to their problem. And then underneath that, I literally just have things like hobbies. So, you know, they play netball or they, I don't know, like love traveling. Again, the reason why I'm talking about e-reader myself is because I'm looking to like get a new one and we're traveling. And like I said, haven't found any that I'm like, yeah, I totally want to buy. So, yeah, like having things like that, like they travel, they, you know, move around a lot for work, therefore they want things like a lightweight or, you know, long battery time, that kind of stuff. But also they want something that's like looks good and matches all of their other products, that kind of stuff. So I'll start putting just those things. And it's literally like a Word document where I just like jot them in. Like, sure, you can make it look pretty, but it's literally just that. And then I'll have a look at all the website analytics and I'll bring them in too. So sometimes I'll be like, you know, like the average, like 45% of your audience is like from Facebook and, you know, 56% are like women, that kind of stuff. And I might sometimes visually represent that for clients if I think that they're like their perception of their audiences are like really different. But generally they have all of that stuff. And so I literally just put it all in a document. And sometimes I even do like a bit of a, which not all copywriters do, and they're not always expected to do this, but a lot of my other work too is I will sort of do a bit of an audit on your current sort of website and your current copy, et cetera. And through my interview with you and asking you questions, I'll be like, okay, well, currently your copy is saying you do this and you are this type of organization and you're saying that you're actually wanting to move to this sort of, you know, point X, and this is how are we going to get there. So I'm going to tweak this element. I'm going to, you know, change your call to action, that kind of stuff. So I do a bit of a analysis. I know not all copywriters do that. Sometimes they just get whatever they're given, but I think it's really good to sort of be like, where am I at?
Yeah.
Who do I, you know, where, like, who do I think I am? And then, you know, where do I want to be? And that's when you can start to see the gaps in some of your like copy or, and that's when you can also pick up too, because copy, a lot of copywriters, sometimes you work with a client and people will expect you to deliver amazing results. So like, oh, we'll only pay you based on, you know, if we sell it like 100 units of our product. And I never work like that. And I'd suggest, you know, for the people listening, not to sort of try and set up those kind of relationships with your copywriters. And the reason is because copywriting is so complex. Like I said, it's very much linked to your website, the rest of your marketing, all of those kind of things. And so by doing a bit of an audit yourself, because I'm guessing a lot of the listeners here, you know, might not be able to get a copywriter on board straight away, is to sort of think, well, we have all this amazing copy, we've got perfect branding, but hang on, when, you know, when we click on our, like, to buy a link, it's not working, or our button's tiny, or those kind of things, and to think about those elements as well. And so sometimes copywriters like me who've got that experience will come in and do a little bit of that. But it's also good for you know, listeners and people who own businesses to do that work themselves prior to getting on a copywriter. And, you know, you'll learn some stuff that you can implement in-house and then you can get the copywriter on to help you you know, tweak and tailor that really specific copy once everything else is laid out. Great.
And, you know, in terms of writing something from scratch for listeners out there, whether they've got product-based businesses or service-based, you've mentioned that like the PAS structure. Is this kind of your main writing process that you would encourage like other people to follow when they're starting from a blank canvas?
Sure. There's also another one called, like, I don't know how to pronounce them because everyone says them differently, but it's AIDA, which is Attention, Interest, Desire, Action, which is another popular one. The reason why I said the PAS one is because it works, I think, for anything from sales copy to, like I said before, like direct response, getting people to take action, to brand awareness copy. And so they're just the most simple. And to be honest, I think it kind of works really well for online and print, where sort of the AIDA one, a lot of the time I think that one works sometimes a little better when you have like print collateral. So, you know, like grabbing their attention. Yes, it's a headline, but a lot of the time it's like if you're doing, say if you're, when I used to work at like with NGOs and they would have like letters that they'll send out for like donations, etc. They had very long form writing and different points and that kind of stuff. I think that AIDA sort of format works better for that. And yeah, but you can literally Google these and there's so many different templates you can use, but they're probably the two main ones. But generally I, to be honest, I didn't even know that's what they were called until recently, which sounds, I know it sounds terrible, but it's, as someone who like writes, I literally just follow, like I just sort of followed my own formula and practicing and looking what other people were doing. And it wasn't until recently I was like, oh, that's the names. Cause lots of people call them like a whole bunch of different things.
Sure.
Yeah. But generally I would start off with going like, whenever I write anything from like a blog post to copy for my clients or for myself, I always say to myself, well, you know, what is the purpose? What am I trying to achieve? You know, so I can sort of distinguish if it's direct response or brand awareness copy. And then I will kind of think about like who is my target audience, you know, what are their problems, what problem am I going to try and solve today? And then I'll sort of like stretch that out a little bit. And then I'll sort of think, well, like how can I agitate that a bit? Like, so take it to the, like I was saying with the frying pan, you know, like if you can't have breakfast and you're like starving or you have to buy breakfast out and that's not healthy, and taking it to sort of like extreme and then looking at the solution. Okay, well, what benefits of my product? You know, how do I solve that? And then I'll start listing out all the benefits of the product. And then that's, and then I start to string it together in actual like sentences, et cetera. But that's how I've kind of structured out. Then I'll start sort of joining it all together. And then later on obviously I go back in and start like editing for like clarity, you know, polishing the headline, polishing the call to action, that kind of thing. So basically a great call to action, which I don't think we've talked about yet. A lot of us just put things like contact us or call me.
At, learn more. Yeah.
Learn more. And I mean, even on my page, I've got like buy now, but I've got sort of like sub copy around that. And so I think it's great. Like great call to actions is when you tell them, like you can have like buy now or whatever you want, but you actually tell them what they're going to get. So instead of saying like contact us, say things like contact us, you know, to get your free, like your free quote, or, and then, you know, you can even have copy underneath saying things like, you know, speak to you in 24 hours, again, letting them know that, hey, like you're going to like be answered. They're going to contact you in 24 hours. Mm. Those kind of things. So I think we kind of get really stuck on the buy now, contact us, call me. We need to kind of be thinking about making it clear what they're going to get after they take an action, particularly on your sales pages with your, you know, when you want them to do a direct response. You don't want them to just read the sales page and be like, do-do-do, and move on. You want them to actually take an action. To be making sure your call to action is really great. And then, again, is like also tapping into what their problem is and how you're going to solve it is what I suggest.
Excellent, excellent. And if there's something that you could change in the world right now, what would it be?
Staying on the topic of homelessness, it would be changing our perception of what it is to be homeless. And also, I suppose, our ideas of like addiction and mental illness. I think, you know, the way that we talk about these topics is so behind, and it really needs to change so we can help the, you know, the people who who do need our help as opposed to victimizing them.
Do you feel that's because people are too afraid to speak about it because it may be a taboo topic and they feel like it's unpolitical? Yeah, not political.
Yeah, you know, definitely. And I mean, it's something that I was, you know, really afraid to come out and say, you know, I'm not your, like, if you looked at me, you wouldn't be like, oh, you know, she was homeless, because our perceptions of being homeless is, you know, unfortunately, you know, a 55-year-old white guy sleeping on the streets with an alcohol bottle, you know, like a bottle of alcohol next to him. And that's just not true. Like, you know, only 6% of the homeless in Australia are sleeping rough, which is sleeping on the streets. The majority are couch surfing or such as myself staying, you know, with friends. And at the time it was with my partner's family. And, you know, the biggest group who are affected by homelessness at the moment is actually women over 55. And domestic violence is a large, factor for women and children who are homeless, but also youth. Younger people are experiencing homelessness at higher rates than ever before, and a lot of that has been attributed to mental health, which, again, you know, there's so many, I suppose, factors that influence this topic, and that's why I feel it's really important to talk about not just one but all of them, because if we talk about mental health but not homelessness, or homelessness and not addiction, we're not really going to solve any of these problems, I guess. You know, it's good to note that the opposite, you know, of addiction isn't being sober, it's connection. People often, I suppose, become homeless or suffer from mental illness or turn to drugs and alcohol because of the lack of connection, where as a society, as human beings, we want to feel connected. And, you know, often they don't. And then instead of bringing them back into our society and saying, you're welcome and loved, we want you here, we push them, I guess, to further to the more of the outskirts of society, and then go, see, I told you, they're, you know, they're bad people. They don't want to be a part of our society. Stay there. And I think that's something we really need to change. And I'm hoping through my writing and through talking about it and encouraging other people to share their stories that, we can start to talk about these issues without the, you know, feeling of being discriminated or taboo, or, you know, that you will somehow lose in business or in your personal life. To be open, and if you're open and honest about these things.
Love that, love that. Excellent. Well, Rachel, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you today. I know the Razor community will get so much value out of what we've shared, and we've gone a bit off topic, and I love the fact that, you know, the Razor Sharp show can give a platform for that, because it is about the impact that we can create with this show. So thank you very much for taking the time to hang out with the Razor Sharp community today.
No, thank you for having me, and sorry I got a bit sniffly midway through.
That's okay. We'll make a great episode, I know, for sure. And likewise for myself. So thanks very much for hanging out, and until next time, stay sharp.
Cool. Thank you.
The Razor Sharp Show is brought to you by Podcast Launch Co. Podcasting tips, tools, and coaching. Visit www.podcastlaunch.co.